This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Evangelicals, once at the periphery of American life, now wield power in the White House and on Wall Street, at universities and in Hollywood, in professional sports and the national media. How have they reached the pinnacles of power in such a short time? And what does this mean for all faiths and for all Americans? We're going to talk with sociologist D. Michael Lindsay of Rice University. His new book is Faith in the Halls of Power, How Evangelicals Joined the American Elite. Good afternoon, Michael. How you doing?
Doing great, Coy. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Been looking forward to it. It's a fantastic book. Let me ask you first, the origins of the project. When did you know that you had sort of framed this in, that this is a project that you were going to pursue?
In the late 90s, I was working for the Gallup Institute in Princeton, New Jersey, as consultant for religion and culture. One of my jobs was to answer media inquiries about religion. And in the run-up to the 2000 election with George W. Bush's candidacy, a lot of folks were asking, you know, what are the percentage of evangelicals in this country? It's interesting because we realized that the percentage of self-identified evangelicals in the U.S. has not grown very much from the 1970s to today. Depending on how you measure it, it's between a quarter and a third of the U.S. adult population. But they've become a lot more prominent, a lot more discussions about evangelicals in politics, but also in other areas of American public life. So I got to thinking, well, how has that come to be and what difference does it make? My hunch was that they were a group of leaders for whom the evangelical faith was personally important and that they had given the movement credibility and legitimacy. I started out thinking I might be able to interview 30 or 40 prominent Americans who are evangelical. In the end, I did 360 interviews, spent about 3 years doing all the interviews around the country in 72 different places, and it was a fantastic project. Learned a whole lot.
Wow. Now, this, if I'm not mistaken, Michael Lindsay, sociologist at Rice University, is our guest. The book is Faith in the Halls of Power. Michael, if I'm not mistaken, this is really the first really comprehensive look, sociological look, at this movement in America, which, like you said, has had an incredibly dramatic impact on so many facets of American life.
Well, it is the first empirical and largest empirical study done about the evangelical faith among people at such a high level. I interviewed two former presidents, Presidents Carter and Bush, 50 cabinet secretaries, 100 CEOs of large companies like Pepsi and Johnson & Johnson, as well as Hollywood moguls, artists, writers, entertainers, directors, as well as professional athletes like Kurt Warner, Tony Dungy, the coach of the Indianapolis Colts, as well as philanthropic and nonprofit leaders. So it's the biggest and most comprehensive examination about faith among the nation's elite.
So tell us some of the things that you learned, perhaps some of the common threads, common messages that you discovered when you sat down with these people, and then perhaps some of the divisions that you may have discovered.
One of the interesting things is that when most people think about evangelicals, they think about politics. And it's true that evangelicals have been really active in American political life. But much of what we think evangelicals have been doing has been on the domestic front about, let's say, same-sex marriage or the abortion debate. I found those were actually not as interesting or as important as some developments that evangelicals have been active on in the international front. So, for example, in the 1990s, when many folks thought that evangelicals were sort of no longer important to political power, they actually were building broad coalitions to lead for the passage of the International Religious Freedom Act of 1998, the most sweeping piece of legislation to deal with religious issues certainly over the last 30 years. What it did is it said that religious freedom is a basic human right, and it made it a bedrock of American foreign policy. In turn, evangelicals became really active on foreign affairs, and what used to be the purview of the State Department and USAID, where evangelicals were not very active, suddenly had a lot more folks from the faith community actively involved. Also, evangelicals have been active in places like Harvard and higher education. Here's an interesting tidbit, Coy. There are more evangelicals on Harvard's campus today than there have been in 200 years. You say, well, how has that come about? It's because places like Harvard and UVA have sought to build national constituencies. So they recruit as vigorously on the East and West Coast as they do in the Midwest and the South. They also want to have a racially and ethnically diverse student body. And in turn, that has produced religious diversity. For example, the Campus Crusade for Christ chapter at Yale University 20 years ago was 100% white. Today it's 90% Asian American. So you have all of this kind of influx of new faces going to elite colleges, and in the end, you end up having a lot more evangelicals at these kinds of places. So I was surprised to see just how active evangelicals have been, not just in politics, but in higher education. They've also been very active in Hollywood, in the artistic world, as well as in corporate America. Now, you asked about sort of the divisions that exist within the movement. Most people who study evangelicals say that there is typically, you know, it's such a big group of people, there have to be some fracture lines. And most folks say, well, it's between the evangelical left and the evangelical right, that it's basically about politics. There are some evangelicals that are really committed to the Republican Party, some evangelicals really committed to the Democratic Party. Well, I didn't find that to be all that helpful because many folks on the evangelical left use some of the very same strategies that folks on the evangelical right do. Jim Wallace, for example, runs an organization called Sojourners, and it's part of the evangelical left, and he's really committed to sort of economic, social justice causes. And then you have somebody like James Dobson, founder of Focus on the Family, who's really much more aligned with the evangelical right. But both of them employ what I call populist evangelical kind of techniques. They want to mobilize the masses for political action. Things like having rallies and flooding the phone lines on Capitol Hill, trying to use whatever kind of political clout they have to try and bring about cultural change. Populist evangelicals typically see themselves as culture warriors who are embattled against the secular elite. Well, that just didn't fit the description of some of the people I interviewed. And so I tried to figure out, well, what did fit them? And I call them in the book cosmopolitan evangelicals. These are folks who believe much the same thing as the populist evangelicals do. They believe the same things about the God and the Bible and heaven and hell, who gets to both places. But they are much softer in sort of their rhetoric. They're less likely to see themselves as culture warriors. Cosmopolitan evangelicals want their faith to be seen as authentic, reasonable, and hopefully attractive. So they share the same kind of evangelistic desire, but they have more modest goals. Instead of trying to take back the country for Christ, for example, as the populists oftentimes think of themselves as doing, the cosmopolitans say, you know, we really want to try and bring about projects that work not just for our own religious goals, but also for the common good. And that's where you've seen some of the what I would consider to be really positive developments over the last 30 years.
We're talking with the sociologist of Rice University, Michael Lindsay. His new book is Faith in the Halls of Power, How Evangelicals Joined the American Elite. Michael, I found it interesting that you talk about evangelicals at very powerful positions at universities and in Hollywood, because if you know, if you listen to any AM radio, it sounds like they don't exist in those places.
Yeah, but it's amazing to see just how fast things have changed. For example, in 1987, we have the most protested film in U.S. history. It's Martin Scorsese's film, The Last Temptation of Christ. 25,000 evangelicals show up on the studio lot to protest its release on opening day. Fast forward 20 years, there's another film that comes out about Jesus. This time, it's Mel Gibson's film, The Passion of the Christ. Evangelicals don't protest that film. They actually become big patrons of that film, buying out entire movie theaters for the film's release. And they actually catapult it to be one of the top grossing films in U.S. history. So while it's true that there are some arenas where evangelicals have been less successful, and I would say that the academy and the arts are probably the two areas where you have more cultural gatekeepers who oftentimes are sort of opposed to evangelical activism as opposed to politics, where it's a whole lot easier to vote your person in office. Evangelicals have still made very significant strides in all these sectors of American public life.
My guest is Michael Lindsay. The book is Faith in the Halls of Power. Talk, if you can, a little bit about what you found when you looked at the business world, because that's one thing about your book that really jumped out at me is how many of these, when you go into the boardrooms of America, and I mean really elite, powerful boardrooms across America, how many people sitting at these big boardroom tables are actually from the Christian right or evangelicals?
That's right. And one of the things that I learned as I was doing these interviews is that many of these business executives who lead huge companies, Fortune 500 companies, I interviewed 40 executives at Fortune 500 companies, so it's a good representation. What I learned is that most of them want their faith to be known, so that, you know, 9 out of 10 of them say that their colleagues know that they are a person of faith and that faith is really important to them. But they don't want to be seen as beating people over the head with their Bibles or as preaching their, you know, their own tradition down the throats of other folks. So instead of trying to be quite so direct about their faith. They try to signal their faith in subtle ways. So they might choose to have certain books, for example, in their office as a way of saying, these are the kind of books I read, and they'll choose Christian titles to be part of that mix. Or they'll decide to use a company gathering or a meeting where they might talk about the importance of faith and values in their life. And they won't be explicitly sectarian in what they say, but you'll get the idea that they want it to be a part of their public persona. I interviewed one Fortune 10 CEO, and he told me that he made a decision early on that his schedule would be publicly available through the company intranet. So anybody who worked at that company could log on and could see what the CEO's schedule was. And as he traveled, he made a decision he always wanted to go to church on Sunday morning, whether he was in Dubai or Delhi or Dallas, wherever he was. And his secretary, after that had been on for a couple of weeks, started to take that particular appointment off of his calendar because she said, well, I know you wouldn't want that to be publicly known. He actually went back and said, no, I want it on there because I want people to know that that's important to me. Well, you can say, well, that's not making a huge difference. But these signals are all around us. You've just got to sort of pay attention to them. And many of the evangelical workers I talked to said that that was important to them, that they wanted to have a boss who understood their faith and who said that faith was okay to be expressed in subtle ways in the American workplace.
Sociologist Michael Lindsay of Rice University is our guest. His new book is Faith in the Halls of Power, How Evangelicals Joined the American Elite. Really, truly the first comprehensive look, sociological look at this profound and important movement here in America over the last few decades. Michael, where to from here? I mean, where do you, as a result of your study, and you can sort of sit back now and see the forest from the trees, where do you see it? Where do you see this movement going in the next few years?
I think evangelicals will become more spread across the political spectrum. I think we've probably seen with the presidency of George W. Bush the closest alliance between evangelicals and the Republican elite. I think that there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the president's administration. Support among young evangelicals at one time for the Bush presidency was at 87%. It's fallen to half of that today. Still, evangelicals are loyal to the president, but they're not nearly as supportive as they were 5 years ago. I think we'll see that there'll be tremendous outreach in the run-up to the 2008 election on the Democratic side to evangelical voters. In fact, there's more outreach occurring in the campaign of Hillary Clinton toward evangelicals than there is in the campaigns of Rudy Giuliani and John McCain combined.
Really?
Yeah, it's just dramatic. It's interesting because typically every campaign has somebody in charge of sort of faith-based outreach.
Right, right.
And on the Democratic side, it's typically a Roman Catholic appointed to that job, or a Jew occasionally. In Hillary Clinton's campaign, she chose a guy named Bernd Strider, who's a self-identified born-again, evangelical Southern Baptist from Grenada, Mississippi. And that just shows how things are changing.
Wow, that is really fascinating. Last question, got about a minute, but Michael, what do you think it is that most Americans don't get or, you know, don't understand about the evangelical movement or about evangelicals?
I think evangelicalism is a whole lot more than we think, and at the same time, it's a lot less. It's a whole lot more because if you think of it just about politics, you miss the vast majority of the ways that evangelicals are active in American communities. They're really committed to education. They're very active in sort of certain parts of the artistic and entertainment sectors, and business life is really vital. So that's why in Facing the Halls of Power, I try to pay attention to all of those sectors. At the same time, it's a whole lot less. There's no theocracy, conspiracy theory that's at work here. Evangelicalism is a movement that's dominated by big personalities. And so the idea that these folks can sort of work together to take over the country is crazy because they can't even agree on what that would actually entail.
Fascinating. Michael Lindsay, sociologist at Rice University. The new book is Faith in the Halls of Power, How Evangelicals Joined the American Elite. Michael, thank you for joining us, and thanks for the book. It really is a beautiful book.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.